学佛与幸福，慈城罗珠堪布讲授。更多课程请访问堪布官方网站www.慧灯之光.com。
各位大家晚上好。今天非常高兴能有机会在这个地方给大家进行交流。
I am very glad to have this opportunity tonight to engage in conversation with you all.
那么我们今天的交流的主题是佛学与心腹。
And the topic of this evening's talk is the relationship between Buddhism or the study of Buddhism and happiness.
那么佛学跟这个心腹有什么关系呢？今天我们跟大家在这个前面的一个半小时当中呢，我们跟大家这个谈一谈佛学跟这个心腹的关系。然后呢，接下来的半个小时的时间当中呢，我们以提问的方式大家互动交流一下。
So for the first half of this evening's talk, I'm going to address the relationship between Buddhism or the study of Buddhism and happiness. And then for the second half, we'll have an opportunity to engage in conversation with each other and ask questions and answers.
那么首先心腹是什么？当然我们所有人都在追求一个东西那个就是心腹。那么曾经有一位西方的哲学家也说过，人生的意义就是追求心腹那么这句话实际上就是从佛学的角度，从哲学的角度讲都是没有错的。我们大家都在追求一个东西，一个东西就是心腹。
First, we need to examine what we mean by happiness. In fact, happiness is something that we are all striving for. A Western philosopher once said that the meaning of life is, in fact, happiness. And from the point of view of Buddhism, this statement is, there's not anything particularly wrong with this statement. In fact, what we are all looking for is a kind of happiness.
那么心腹呢，我们19世纪18世纪的时候呢很多人认为我们的心腹就是来自于物质金钱只要有物质，也就是说我们的生活水平提高了以后呢就是能够拥有心腹。当时的很多人的观念就是这样子，包括不少的这个哲学家的观点也就是这样子。
During the 18th and 19th centuries, many people, including numerous philosophers, were of the view that happiness could be obtained through achieving a particular material standard of living.
但是到了21世纪的时候呢，越来越多的人在怀疑这种观点。
However, now by the 21st century, many people are really coming to doubt this idea that happiness is something primarily derived from material sources.
为什么越来越多的人怀疑这种说法呢？就是因为我们现在很多人已经有了非常这个丰富的物质生活，但是呢，我们的心腹的指数呢，并没有提高，而且只有我们找到一个准确的这个心腹的指数以来，就是发现这个心腹的指数一直都在下降，而没有一直都在上升。
And the reason that many people are coming to doubt this is because despite the fact that we have already, or many people have already arrived at an extremely affluent standard of material living, in fact, our level of happiness is not increasing. Many people are finding, on the contrary, it's actually decreasing.
那么这个问题是为什么呢？我们首先要解决这个问题的话，我们首先要从人是什么什么是人从这个地方讲起。
If we're going to address this question, we really need to start by looking at what we even mean by with the notion of human. What is it in fact to be human?
简单的说，人就是无知和精神的组合体人的一部分就是无知，另外的一部分就是精神精神和物质的组合体叫做人。
Putting it very simply, we can say that a human is a composite of the material and psychology, that, and the psychological, that a human has a material or aspect of form and an aspect that is made up of mind.
因为人是精神和物质的组合体，所以人有两种不同的生活一个就是用来满足我们的肉体的需求，另外一种生活呢，就是来满足我们的精神的需求。是就是因为人有两种需求，所以人的生活就有两个不同的领域，两个不同的生活。
Given that a human is a composite of these two different realms, we have lives corresponding to these different realms. We have a physical life, the purpose of which is to satisfy our physical needs, and we also have a life, a psychological life, which addresses the needs of our mind or our inner needs.
所以我们在这个精神的生活和物质生活这两个生活当中，任何一个生活当中就是缺乏了它的某些因素或者条件的时候呢，我们就是感觉不到幸福，或者是我们的心中就有这个就会产生痛苦。
Whenever either of these realms fails to have its needs or basic conditions satisfied, then we experience a perception of unhappiness, that our needs have not been satisfied.
那么物质的这个生活，人的物质的生活，这个生活当中呢，缺乏一些东西的时候，这到底缺乏了什么？我们很清楚我们很清楚，比如说我们饿的时候，我们知道我需要食物口渴的时候呢，我知道我需要水，然后呢，我们知道我们需要空气等等总而言之，在这个物质的这个生活当中，缺乏了什么，我们非常的清楚。
In respect of our physical needs, when we are lacking something, it's usually very easy for us to perceive what it is we're lacking and how to go about addressing it. For example, if we're thirsty, it's very obvious we need to drink water. If we are in need of clean air, we know it's clean air we need to breathe. Our physical needs are something we're very easily able to identify and go about solving.
但是这个物质生活当中我们该有的所有的条件都具备了，该有的东西都有了但是呢，我们还是仍然就是感觉不到幸福，总是有一种有一种缺乏的感觉，总是感觉到少了一个什么东西，但是我们不太清楚少了什么东西。
Despite the fact that all our basic material needs are already satisfied, we nevertheless find ourselves feeling that we are somehow lacking something. But as to what this something is, many of us don't really have any clear idea.
那么这个今生的这个生活当中，如果没有足够的它的这个让我们感觉到幸福的条件，这样子的话，就像我们在物质生活当中缺乏了物质一样， 精神生活当中缺乏了他的这些条件的时候呢，我们同样的感觉不到幸福。但是呢，这个就跟我们的物质的生活不一样，这个精神生活当中呢缺乏了什么东西，我们大家都不清楚，到底缺乏了什么都不太清楚。
As when we are lacking something in terms of our material life, when we're lacking the ability to satisfy a particular material need, so too with our psychological needs or the needs of our mind, when we're unable to fulfill its basic needs, it's not possible for us to feel happiness. However, unlike the material realm, we are basically unclear as to what it is we need in order to satisfy the needs of our mind.
那么这个时候呢，我们就会去问心理医生或者是我们去问心理学家因为我们的我该有的这些物质方面呢都有了，但是呢感觉不到幸福，不但是感觉不到幸福，而且就是就在我们的心里就产生了各种各样的心理疾病，比如说抑郁症等等那么这个时候呢我们回去找心理医生。
When we find ourselves in this predicament of not feeling happy but and wanting to know what it is that we need in order to make us happy, many of us will turn to mental health care professionals or psychiatrists.
那么心理医生的这个方法是什么呢？就是让我们吃药。
The primary method of addressing this problem that they will prescribe is taking medicine.
用药物来解决我们的这个内心的问题、心理的问题，这是一个这个不是一个很好的方法。
This is not a very good way of addressing things.
因为药物来解决这个问题的时候呢，它就是有一种负面的作用这个负面的作用就会严重影响到我们的这个思维的这个活力这样子以后呢，它有这个负面的这作用，所以它不是最理想的治疗的方法。
This isn't the best way of addressing the problems because relying on medicine hasSome negative side effects, one of them being the fact that taking medicine in this way reduces or negatively impacts on the agility of our mind.
那么西方的心理学，西方的心理学被唯物主义的思想绑架了，所以呢，它没有一个它没有一个像这个生物学、像物理学一样的这个革命性的这个转变或者是进展。
The field of psychology has essentially been kidnapped by materialism, and unlike other fields of science such as biology, etc., it lacks a revolutionary capacity.
因为他不了解他了解的都是我们的心的最外表的东西，我们的心理学他了解的都是我们的心的最外表的东西这我们的内心的深处或者是内心的真正的我们的精神的真正的本质心理学家不了解。
Essentially, what psychology looks at is only the outermost superficial level, our mind, in terms of the deeper levels and the deeper recesses of the mind. This is something that psychology does not have great insights into.
So, he gave us these treatment methods are very simple, and they cannot solve the fundamental problems of such methods.
So for this reason, the methods of addressing mental problems that it provides are extremely, they're extremely simplistic and are unable to address the core root of the problem.
所以我们目前这个精神上的这些问题呢，就是越来越严重，就像美国 就从1960年到2000年这个之间的40年的时间当中啊，短短的40年的时间当中呢，他的抑郁症的这个患者增加了10倍。
So for this reason, the number of people suffering from mental health issues is ever increasing. In the case of America, for example, over a 40-year period from 1960 to the year 2000, the number of people suffering depression increased tenfold.
然后呢，当初的这个刚刚开始的时候，这个抑郁症的患者的平均的年龄是29岁。
To begin with, the average age of depression sufferers in America was 29.
然后40年以后呢，40年以后呢，这个平均的患者的平均的年龄就是14岁，包括八九岁、十一二岁的小孩都有抑郁症。
However, after 40 years, the average age of depression sufferers had dropped to 14 years of age. So this meant that by this time, there were already people suffering depression as young as 8 and 9 years of age.
如果我们的18世纪、19世纪的时候的这些逻辑或者这些理论是准确的话，那么因为我们现在拥有这么多的物质，那么我们的物质就增加了这么多，那么这样子的话，我们应该是非常幸福的，因为应该是这个我们的幸福指数应该是越来越大的，我们的这些抑郁症或者是其他的这些精神方面的这些问题应该是越来越少的。
By rights, if the logic, if the ideology of the 18th and 19th centuries were correct, then by now, in this age where we have such great material affluence, we should be happier than we've ever been. Mental health issues should be fewer, in fact, than they've ever been.
但是事实就不是这样子啊！这个时候呢，我们很多人都怀疑为什么我们的比如说西方在短短的这个40年当中，他们的这个个人的收入就翻了三番，增长了三倍。那么过去的这个理论是对的话那么我们的幸福指数也应该是增长了三倍。但是非常奇怪的现象就是我们的物质越来越多，精神的上感觉不到幸福，而且幸福指数呢就是越来越低越来越下降这个就是一个矛盾。
But in actual fact, this is not the case. What we are discovering is that in many countries, in many Western countries in particular, personal income over the past several decades has increased threefold.And if the ideas, if the theory of the previous centuries were correct, then if incomes have increased threefold, then by right so should our happiness have increased threefold too. But this has not been the case. So we can see a contradiction has emerged between our material prosperity and our happiness.
在这个问题上呢，本来心理学可以解决很大的问题的。按理来说，心理学是可以解决这些问题的。
In theory, psychology should be able to address these problems.
心理学它本来就是一种科学，所以呢，它不应该站在唯物主义或者是唯心主义的某一个角度去看，它应该有自己的方法去研究精神。
As a science, psychology should in fact have its own clear method of investigating the mind. It shouldn't stand, take a materialist stance or one that is overly mind-only either.
但是因为他站在这个唯物的角度，唯物和唯心它不是科学，它是哲学的思想。因为心理学家他接受了唯物的这个思想以后呢，他有太多太多的限制，太多的限制，这些限制突破不了，这样子以后呢，他的研究 啊，就是非常啊，他的研究的结果是非常有限的。
However, because psychology has been overly influenced by materialism, which is a philosophy rather than a science, this has very much limited the extent to which psychology has been able to make breakthrough discoveries in terms of the nature of the mind.
那么这个时候呢，我们可以去看看这个像古老的2500多年前的这个智慧，就是佛陀的这个智慧当中有没有我们可以用的东西比如说你可以信佛也可以不信佛，或者是我们不信佛不学佛的人也有没有这个佛教里面有一些东西有没有他们可以用的，我们可以到这个佛教里面去寻找。
In this situation, we should avail ourselves of the opportunity to look towards the Buddhist tradition, a tradition of over 2,500 years, to see whether it contains any wisdom that is of use in this situation. This is something that wisdom that we can put to use irrespective of whether or not we are Buddhists, irrespective or not of whether we have Buddhist faith.
那么佛教里面呢有一部分它是哲学就是跟过去的哲学是差不多的，讲都是讲这些哲学的理论那么另外一部分呢，它就是讲人的实实在在的这个人的感受所以这个就是属于科学方面，所以有哲学的科学的两个部分，佛教里面就本来就有这两个部分。
The Buddhist tradition, in fact, has a philosophy component and a scientific component. The scientific component dealing with the concrete nature of human perception.
还有一个呢，宗教的色彩比较浓厚的一部分，佛教里面就有这样有三个部分。
There's also another component, a third component, which you might call a religious component.
那么不学佛的人不学佛的人可能是没有办法用这个宗教色彩比较浓厚的这些各种各样的仪式这个可能是很多人没有办法用，除了学佛的，除了佛教徒以外，可能很多人不能接受了。
With the exception of people with Buddhist faithThe religious component of Buddhism, including its rituals and other aspects, is something that may be difficult for other people to accept.
那么另外的一部分呢，哲学的一部分，我们讲的都是理论所以这个可能我们在这个要解决一个实际的问题的，尤其是解决一个心灵上的问题的时候呢，也许这些也许可能也用不上。
In terms of the philosophical content, because this is theoretical in nature, if we are going to use this to address a concrete problem of our mind, then it may not be might not be completely useful.
但是第三个部分就是是一种人的一种亲身经历，可以完全是可以自己去感受的东西。这个部分呢，我们比如说。学佛的不学佛的，有宗教信仰的没有宗教信仰的，包括无神论者唯物论者都可以用，这一部分呢大家都可以用的。
However, the third component, the scientific component, which relates to the direct experience of the mind, is something that anyone can put to use, regardless of whether or not they have Buddhist faith, regardless of whether they're atheist, agnostic, it's available and accessible to everyone.
那么我想这部分呢可以给我们解决，比如说我们的抑郁症还有很多很多各种各样的这个精神上的问题都是可以解决的。
And I think that it's this component thatoffers great hope in terms of resolving many problems that we have, including mental health issues like depression.
在美国啊，比如说像学校、像医院啊等等啊，很多啊这个行业当中，他们在用一个啊禅修的方法。
Many schools and many hospitals in America these days employing a particular meditation method.
那么这个禅修呢？他不一定是学佛，他们不一定有宗教的信仰，但是呢，要解决个人的这个心灵的问题的时候，精神上的问题的时候，这个方法是非常有效的。
The people who are applying this method or employing this method are not people necessarily with Buddhist faith, and not necessarily students of Buddhism. However, in terms of addressing their concrete problems, this meditational technique is very useful.
那么他们用的方法是佛教里面的方法，一个是南传佛教里面的一个禅修的方法，另外一个呢是藏传佛教里面的一个禅修的方法，他们在用这两个禅修的方法来解决很多人的心灵的问题。
So one of the methods that they are using comes from the southern or the Theravada tradition of Buddhism, and the other comes from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. There are two meditational techniques that are being used to address mental problems.
南传佛教的，他们用的南传佛教的这个禅修啊，就是极致的修法啊，就是一种禅修里面有一个叫做极致的修法。
The meditation technique that they have are using from the Theravada tradition is a shamatha meditation technique.
那么第二个呢？藏传佛教的这个方法就是用修慈悲心啊，修慈悲心，培养慈悲心来解决，通过这种方法来解决自己的心灵问题，就是这两个。
And the technique they're using from the Tibetan tradition is a meditation on compassion, compassion meditation. Essentially, they're using these two meditation techniques.
我想今天我们给大家介绍一下，就这两个方法。
So what I'd like to do this evening is briefly introduce these two techniques to everyone.
首先我们的这个精神为什么会出现更多各种各样的这些这个心理的疾病呢？就是因为我们的一部分呢，就是我们不了解一些真相不了解一些世界的真相和我们自己的精神的真相不了解了以后呢，我们有很多很多错误的认识这个错误的认识导致了各种的这个心灵的混乱最后就是产生了像抑郁症或者是其他的这个心理疾病。
The reason that we are manifesting so many mental illnesses is essentially because we have a mistaken recognition of the truth of the external world and the nature of our own minds.And it's essentially not understanding the truth of the external world and our own internal minds as well that creates a situation where these mistaken perceptions cause us mental chaos and the development of mental illness.
那么通过这个禅修的方法，两个禅修的方法都是一样，尤其是这个小乘佛教里面讲的这个机智的这个修法通过这种方法来完全可以开发我们的大脑目前我们的大脑只开发了10%左右，但是通过这种禅修的方法，它完全可以这个一个人的大脑完全可以开发100%。
Of the Theravada tradition, the Shamatha meditation technique is able to amplify the or access the latent abilities or potential of the human brain. At the present time, we only utilize approximately 10% of our potential, whereas using these meditational techniques, it's possible to access 100% of the potential of our minds.
那么开发了以后呢，有很多的这些潜在的功能，它本来，比如说我们的心灵，它本身就是有这个功能，但是没有开发出来的潜在的能力啊，也就是潜在的能力都开发出来了以后呢，我们就会我们的心中心理从精神当中会出现很多非常神奇的力量。
And it's by accessing allowing these latent capacities of our mind to come to light that we will enable our minds to realize a mysterious kind of power.
那么开发的方法是什么呢？比如说我们在现实生活当中我们的心我们的意识是非常混乱的我们的意识都是一直都不断的在波动而且这个波动的幅度是相当大的在这个情况下我们没有办法开发我们的这个精神的潜在的力量。
In the course of our everyday life, our minds, our consciousness is usually in a state of great flux, of great turbulence. And in this kind of state, it's really not possible to access the latent potentialities of our minds.
那么什么样的情况下我们可以开发这个大脑的功能呢？就是心完全平静了以后就是我们这个意识的这个波动逐渐逐渐的减少逐渐的下降最后它可以达到一个水平线一个非常平静的状态这个状态当中它就能够开发潜在的力量。
It's only after we are able to bring our minds into a state of calmness, a state of very extreme tranquility that we are able to enable the latent potentials of our mind to be accessed.
那么佛教的心理学里边就讲我们的人的这个精神可以分八种层次。
From the point of view of Buddhist psychology, the mind, the human mind can bebe divided or distinguished or divided into eight different levels.
那么八种层次当中前面的五个是我们的感官的直觉比如说我们的视觉听觉触觉等感官的这个感受。
The first of these five levels are the five levels corresponding to our different sense organs.Our eyes, our ears, our sense of touch, etc.
然后第六个呢，就是我们的意识意识就是可以分析、判断外在的这个事物的有这样子的功能的这个意识就佛教里面叫做意识。实际上，我们平时在现实生活当中思考、思维的这个东西就是意识。第六。就是第六个。
And the sixth level is what we refer to by consciousness or the mind, essentially that which is able to discern, evaluate, judge, analyze, etc. That which we use in our everyday lives to think, to analyze, to reflect.
然后第七个呢，我们任何时候，任何一个我们的念头当中。就是涉及到所有的念头，任何一个念头都离不开的一个观念这个就是自我的这个佛教里面就叫做我执比如说我要去学习我要去上班，我要去这个赚钱等等，这些所有的念头当中呢，有一个我执这个离不开，所有的念头都离不开，这是一个非常稳定的一个观念这个是第七。
And the seventh level relates to the sense of self, essentially the self that is present and inherent in all of the thoughts that we, conscious thoughts that we manifest. Thoughts about what I need to do, I need to go to work, I need to do this. All of these contain an inherent assumption of self.
然后第八呢？第八就叫做这个阿赖耶识，它是一个非常平静的状态。比如说我们在，比如说某比如说一个湖面它没有波浪没有这个波纹就是非常的平静没有风的时候，这个湖面就是一片非常平静的状态一样。我们的心。非常平静的状态可以达到一个这样的状态，这个叫做阿赖耶识，这是我们的所有的今生的基础。
And the eighth level is essentially the foundation of our mind. It's what we call the Alaya consciousness. And it's like an extremely still, tranquil face of a lake with no waves and no ripples at all.
那么这个状态当中，平时我们在这个状态当中就开始产生我们的意识，还有这个我们的这个初觉、修觉等等。然后呢，禅定的时候呢，这所有的这些这个意识，然后呢这个识觉、初觉都回归归零归到这个禅这个零，零就是阿赖耶识，就。一个非常平静的状态，回到这个平静的状态的时候呢，叫做禅定。
And it's this eighth level that essentially all of our conscious thoughts, our perceptions, etc. It's this level that these thoughts and these perceptions essentially return to. They return to a zero point, a point of utter calmness and tranquility. And this is what happens in a state of meditative absorption.
在这个平静的状态当中呢，它有非常非常多的功能我们可以举一个例子，比如说在现实生活当中，比如说我们比如说我们很难回忆起，比如说上一个月的今天上一个月的今天的，就是现在，就是八点钟左右的时间的时候，我在干什么？我在说什么事？说什么话？做什么事？这个我们在现实生活当中是很难以想象很难回忆的。
So there are many abilities or functions that we can access in this extremely calm and tranquil state. For example, it's usually extremely difficult for us to recall what we were doing at this exact time at approximately 8 o'clock 1 month ago, what we were doing, what we were saying, where we were, etc.
但是在这个非常平静的状态当中呢，它有能力去想，比如说他有能力去回忆，比如说你上幼儿园的第一天父母带你去上幼儿园的时候，你穿了什么衣服，父母穿了什么衣服，然后老师穿什么衣服，老师给家长说什么话，他都完全可以回忆起来。
However, having returned to this absolutely calm state in meditative absorption, it's possible to recall, for example, the first day of kindergarten, what you were wearing, what your parents were wearing, what your teacher was wearing, what your teacher said to your parents, etc.
但是在现实生活当中，这个是几乎是不可能的但是我们的心平静了以后，它就是有一个这样子的升起的功能，它完全可以做得到。
In our ordinary lives, it's extremely difficult for us to be able to do this. However, once we're able to calm our minds, then these kinds of extraordinary abilities are able to be manifested.
它的方法是什么呢？它方法先把心平静下来。平静下来了以后呢，然后在非常平静的这个状态当中，他去想我刚刚这个念头产生这个念头的前一分钟、前一秒钟，我在想什么？ 他先去追究这个前一秒钟的这个念头。
So in this meditation technique, one attempts to discern what one's thought was prior to 1 second prior to this current moment.
然后前一秒钟的时候他在想什么，这个回忆了以后呢，然后再去想再前一秒钟的时候呢他在想什么，然后他又是有一个什么样的念头，然后这个回忆到了以后呢，在这个非常平静的状态当中呢，然后再前面五分钟之前，十分钟之前，然后呢一直都往回去想，这样子以后呢，他每一个时间段的这个念头他都能够记得非常清楚的，每一个时间段的感受他记得非常的清楚的。
By regressively working back through the thought that one had 1 second ago, working back through different intervals, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, regressing further into the past, it's possible for the mind to recall extremely clearly everything that was going on.
然后这样子以后呢，我们再往前然后呢，昨天这个时候，前天这个时候，上个月的这个时候，上上个月的这个时候，然后去年的这样子一年一年，每一年的这个每一个念头，那个时候在想什么，在说什么话，都能够往前可以推的。
And by working back in this regressive way, yesterday, the day before yesterday, 1 week ago, 1 month ago, last year, the year before that, it's possible for us to be able to recall everything that was happening, everything that was being said.
通过这种方法可以最后就是可以推到小时候三岁的时候，两岁的时候，一岁的时候，可以完全可以往前推。
It's possible using this method to be able to recall our experiences back to even 3 and 2 and 1 years of age.
那么这个是最后我们可以推到刚刚出生的时候，刚刚出生的时候想什么看到什么听到什么这个完全是可以非常清晰的可以回忆的。
It's even possible for us to be able to, using this method, remember when we were just born, what we were thinking, what we were hearing, what we were seeing.
这就是一个我们的心的功能，我们的内心的一种功能这个跟佛教没有关系这个跟其他的宗教也是没有关系，这就是我们人心的一种，它本身就是我们的精神的一种功能而已。
So this is one capacity that the mind has. It's not related to Buddhism in particular. It's just an inherent ability or an inherent potential that the mind is able to access.
但是我们的一般的心理学家他还不知道他还不知道这个我们的心有一个这样子的功能，就像当初这个在西方比如说我们做梦的时候做梦的时候完全可以非通过一种方法完全可以知道自己在做梦有一个这样子的方法，但是呢当初的时候这个西方的心理学家否定了他们认为这个不可能的，做梦的时候不可能知道自己在做梦但是呢后来就是通过很多的研究现在已经知道了，现在他们都觉得我们做梦的时候可以知道自己在做梦同样的我们现在讲的王辉这样子通过这种方法能够回忆一岁两岁的时候的这个事情这个功能心理学家还不太清楚这个方法他还不知道。
However, this method of being able to recall past experiences going as far back as 1 year of age and 2 years of age is not something that Western psychology or modern psychology knows about or understands. It's just like in the early days of psychology, the idea that it was possible to be aware while one was dreaming, that one was dreaming, was something that psychology did not accept. However, many years later, after much research, psychology now recognizes that it is possible using particular methods to be aware when one is in a dream that one is dreaming.
那么我们比如说得了抑郁症啊，或者是其他的这个心理疾病的时候呢，通过自己的内心的这个调整，通过这个调整的方法，心啊精神完全可以治自己的病。
And similarly, in the case of depression, it's also possible that we apply methods of training the mind that are able to completely solve, completely cure the disease in question.
就像我们的肉体啊。也有一个这样子的自愈的功能，比如说我们的肉体受伤了以后呢，啊，实际上药物起到的作用是什么呢？就是给它消毒，啊，不要让它感染，啊，这样子以后呢，啊，这种情况下，肉体它自己有这个功能，它自己完全可以自愈。
It's just like our physical body, when we have a wound, for example.In fact, the medicine, the topical medicines that we apply really just have an antiseptic function. The body itself, the skin, has its own auto-healing mechanisms.
所以我们的意识精神上出问题的时候，通过药物来解决，这个不是最好的方法。最好的方法呢，就是通过他自己来治疗啊，自己的这个疾病，这个是最理想的治疗的方法。
So, when we have a mental illness, addressing it through medicine or attempting to solve it through taking medicine is certainly not the best way. It is far more sensible to address the problems of the mind by using the mind itself.
这个精神它本来就是有这样子的这个力量啊，这个力量是不是佛教创造的，也不是某一个宗教创造的，它这是我们每一个人的这个内心的当中，我们每一个人的精神就有这些潜在的功能，就是有这些潜能。
This latent capacity of the mind.Is not something that was invented by a religious tradition. It's not something that was invented by Buddhism. It's something that every human mind possesses as its latent capacities.
好，那么这个处理的治疗的方法是什么呢？方法呢？我们把我们的这个除了我们的第八个。第八是阿赖耶识以外啊，所有的眼耳鼻舌身，尤其是我们的意识啊，都回归零啊，归零。零就是一个非常平静的状态啊，都达到这个状态，然后就在这个平静的状态当中啊停留啊，保持这个状态。
And we are able to access these potentials by bringing our mind into a state of complete calmness. And we do this by bringing those other seven levels of the mind, our sensorial perceptions, and particularly the sixth level, our mind consciousness, back to the zero point of the eighth level.
那么这个禅定的状态当中，这个状态呢，是 人的心身是一个极度的放松的状态啊，平时我们人睡觉休息啊，都达不到这个极度的放松的状态，达不到这个程度。所以在这种放松的状态当中呢，人的压力啊，人的这个疲劳等等，所有的问题在这个当中可以化解。
The level of relaxation that is accessed in this state of meditation is a relaxation far greater than any other kind we're used to in states of just normally relaxing ourselves, normal states of leisure. And it's in this state of radical relaxation that all of our concerns and pressures and stresses are able to be dissolved.
那么这个时候的状态呢，我们比如说我们看蓝天啊，就是当天空没有任何这个云啊无云的时候，我们看蓝天一样啊，这个我们的这个心的这个非常平静的这个状态当中呢啊，没有焦虑，没有压力啊，没有这个悲伤啊，所有的这些负面的这些情绪都离开了啊，就像一个非常非常蓝的天一样，所有都离开。在这个离开的状态当中啊，就是停留这个时间，比如说每天20分钟、半个小时这样子的时间的话，那么很多精神上的问题都可以通过这个方法来解决的。
The state of the mind in this meditative absorption can be likened to a completely clear blue sky with no clouds whatsoever. It's a state in which we have no negative emotions, disturbing thoughts, anxiety, worry, sadness, etc. And it's by abiding in this state for extended periods of time, say 20 minutes or up to half an hour every day, that we're able to address the basic problems of our mind.
这种方法是它这种方法的这个效果它的结果是经过很多的科学家这个的研究最后就是证实了人的这种禅修的方法就完全可以调节完全可以调整人的心态，还有治疗各种各样的这个心灵上的病。然后他通过这个禅修可以调节人的大脑的这个脑波这个都是有科学的这个科学印证这一点了。
Scientific research has proven that this kind of meditation is able to not only adjust or impact moods and emotional states, but also solve and address mental problems and even alter the frequency of brain waves.
那么这个禅修的这个具体的方法呢，有非常非很多很多的方法，但是我们可以介绍一个简单的大家都能够用得上的一个方法。
This kind of meditation, shamatha meditation, calmness meditation, is one that there are many, many techniques of in the Buddhist tradition. However, tonight I'd like to introduce a simple and straightforward method, one that everyone can put into practice.
那么这个它有比如说按照佛教的方法，那么就是有一些身体的姿势等等调这个呼吸的调整也有这些，但是呢我们今天简单一点，把这些都不讲了，简单讲一个它的主体的这个具体的方法。
For the sake of simplicity this evening, I'm just going to go straight into the core details of the practice. Usually we have particular meditation postures and ways of regulating the breath that we do as preparatory stages of meditation. But tonight I'm just going to go straight into the core of the practice.
一个非常简单的简单的方法是什么？比如说，我们首先某一个物体就是一个很小的东西放在前面然后呢这个大左两只眼睛就看在这个前面的比如说这个上面的某一个凸纹某一个子或者是把这个两只眼睛专注在这个物体上的某一个点眼球不转动然后不左右看，尽量的不要太多的眨眼然后两只眼睛就定在这个物质上。
What we do is we take an object, any object, and we place it in front of ourselves. And then we fix our two eyes, we fix our gaze on this object, either a word or a letter on the object or a patch of the object somewhere, and we fix our eyes steadily on the object, not allowing them to roam to the left or right. We keep them fixed steadily on the object in front of us.
然后两只眼睛定在这个某一个点上面然后同时我们把我们的心也就跟着两个眼睛专注在这个某一个点这样子以后呢两只眼睛跟心这三个都锁定在某一个点上不动不动摇不动摇就是安住也就是停留在某一个点上心不动摇停留在一个点上。
And as our eyes are fixed on a spot on the object in front of us, we also bring our mind into focus with our eyes too, so that both of our eyes and our minds are similarly focused single-pointedly onthe spot on the object that we are looking at. And it's important here that our minds are not wandering like our eyes as well. We keep them focused steadily and single-pointedly on the object.
我们在现实生活当中痛苦、快乐，还有我们的很多很多的这个价值观都是我们的这个意识它决定的。但是呢我们几乎都不怎么去关注我们的意识它本身它的状态是什么样子它的本质是什么样以及它的自然的这个变化的规律是什么我们几乎都不去关注的。
Even though our feelings of happiness, our feelings of pain, in fact,all of our value judgments, in fact, derive and originate from our minds, our consciousness, our mind consciousness. Our mind consciousness itself is not something that we are in the habit of directing our attention to understanding its nature, how it functions, what the natural order of its changes are.
比如说我们看一张照片的时候这个照片上的每一个东西的每一个细节我们的这个意识去分析这个图片上的每一个细节我们的意识呢只关注这个图片这个照片但是呢他不去关注他这个时候不去关注这个照相机是什么样子但是实际上这个凸的好与坏是以这个照相机决定的但是呢我们平时看这个图片的时候呢他不去关注这个照相机是什么他就关注这个图上面的每一个细节
It's like, for example, when we're looking at a photograph of a landscape.And we pay attention to all of the various details of the image that we're looking at. And it's based on these details that we assess the quality of the photo we're looking at. Despite the fact that it is the camera, actually, that determines the quality of the photograph, the camera itself is not something that we often direct our inquiry towards.
同样的，我们在现实生活当中啊，我们得不到啊我们想得的东西啊，或者是我们面对我不愿意面对的这样子的问题的时候，这样子的事情的时候呢，然后我们会产生一种感受啊，这个感受叫做痛苦。但是呢，我们就不去在乎啊，或者是不关注这个痛苦它本质是什么啊，到底什么叫做痛苦，我们几乎就不去关注这个问题的。
And it's like in the course of our lives when we don't get something that we want, we fail to fulfill one of our desires, or when we're forced to confront something we don't want to confront, we experience a feeling of pain. However, as to exactly what that feeling of pain is, what its essence is, that's something that we often don't really probe.
因为我们第一个不了解我们的意识它的真相，第一个第二个，当我们感觉到痛苦的时候呢，我们不了解这个痛苦的本质是什么，因为不了解这两个，所以痛苦非常非常的折腾我们。
So it's because we don't understand the basic nature of our minds, and we also don't have a proper understanding of the basic essence or the basic nature of pain, that in fact feelings, perceptions of pain and suffering cause us great headaches.
如果这个时候我们第一个了解我们的意识，第二个了解这个痛苦的本质，这样子的话，那么所谓的痛苦呢，就像一个轻轻的风一样吹过去一样，它就是来去，但是它不会给我们留下任何东西。
If we had these two things, a proper understanding of the nature of our minds and also a proper understanding of the fundamental nature of pain and suffering, then ultimately all of the negative feelings, the pain and suffering that we usually experience in the course of our lives would just be like a gentle breeze that passes us over. Comes, it goes, but it doesn't ultimately leave us with any residue.
最遗憾的是什么呢？我们大家都非常的害怕这些精神上的这些焦虑、抑郁等等这些精神上的这些感受，我们都很害怕大家都不想面对，不敢面对大家都很害怕，但是呢，我们不去了解它是什么，不去了解它的真相是什么。
Really, the most regrettable thing is that we, despite the fact all of us have such fear of negative mental states such as depression and fear, all kinds of negative mental states, we don't direct our energies to understanding what these negative mental states actually are.
那么关注的方法是什么呢？就是我们刚前面讲过的我们把我们的心和两只眼睛就定在一个某一个点上，然后呢，心平静下来，把所有的这些去思考过去的、思考未来的所有的这些念头放下，平静，在这个平静的状态当中停留的时候呢，然后我们会发现一个全新的世界，也就是说我们从来没有看到的一个新的世界。
So when we're engaging in this meditation, we've got our eyes and our mind fixated on the object in front of us. We've let go all thoughts of the past, and we've let go of all thoughts of the future as well. We'll find in this situation we can discover an entirely new world altogether.
这个新的世界呢，就是我们自己的人的这个精神世界，也就是我们自己的一部分。比如说，过去我们只知道我们的身体是肉体但是我们不知道里面的细胞细胞核等等这些很细微的东西，我们不知道的有后来医学发达了以后呢，我们知道这个肉体到底是个什么同样的，我们就是这，如果这个心理学家那心理学能够发展的话或者是我们可以在直接可以用佛教的方法去看的话，那么我们就会发现我们的精神世界里面呢，也有太多太多深层次的我们从来没有发现的这个状态。
And this entirely new world is the inner nature of our mind. It's just like in the beginning stages of medical investigation, we only had a very superficial understanding of what the human body was. We didn't, for example, have an understanding of it at the cellular level. It's the same with the mind. If psychology were to advance or if we were to approach the mind with Buddhist techniques, then we would find that there are an abundance of levels and levels of depth to the mind of which we are currently unaware.
我们现在很多人就是心不能专注不能专注比如说学习的时候，工作的时候尤其是我们要非常专心的，要非常细心的去处理的一些事情当我们遇到这样子的工作的时候然后我们的心就是不能专注这个时候呢，就是我们的心就胡思乱想，不能专注在某一个点上那么这个就是因为我们没有这样子的训练那么刚才我们介绍的这种训练是完全可以帮助我们我把我们的心静下来这个训练稍微我们稍微用的时间长一点的话，那么我们比如说在工作学习的时候要用心的去很专心专注的去做一件事情的时候然后我们的心完全是可以非常专注非常专注这个时间这个点上这个事情上，而且它可以在这个上面呢停留很长时间，在很长时间当中都不会有其他的杂念。
Many people these days find themselves unable to focus, whether it be in their work, during study, or when they've got a task to do that requires them to really focus in a very subtle or detailed way. However, by applying the meditation technique that we introduced tonight, it's possible for us by training our minds in this way. Essentially, our inability to focus is a result of not having trained our minds. So by training our mind in this way, it's possible for us to not only be able to focus very with great concentration on tasks that we do, but also to be able to concentrate over extended periods of time.
然后因为工作压力或者是学习的压力或者其他的原因，失眠的人或者是睡眠的质量非常差做噩梦这样子的人在晚上睡觉之前就休20分钟半个小时这样子的话，那么完全可以调节这个可以解决失眠的问题。
These days also there are a lot of people who suffer from insomnia, poor sleep quality, nightmares, etc. By applying this meditation technique for even 20 minutes before bedtime, it's possible to overcome these problems.
然后这个完全可以治疗抑郁症抑郁症呢就是如果有两种方法，一个是如果这个抑郁症就是比较严重而且 已经是比较晚期的，或者是非常严重的时候呢，首先可以吃一点点药然后通过这个药来控制一下，然后控制好了以后呢，然后放弃药物打坐，完全可以解决这个问题。
This approach or this technique can also be used in overcoming depression. Of course, there are essentially two different situations. In a case of where there are advanced symptoms of depression, then depression sufferer could take medication to begin with in order to bring the symptoms under control. And then after that's happened, stop taking medicine and start to use the meditation technique.
那么另外一个呢，就是刚刚得这个抑郁症还没有非常严重的时候，这个时候呢完全不需要治疗通过这个方法完全是可以治疗的。
However, for people who are in the early stages of depression, then it's not necessary to take medication at all. Relying on this method will be able to help them overcome their symptoms.
这是我们的一般的这个层面上的一个调节的方法。另外一个呢，佛教的这个它的度特的这个方法呢，它就是非常深入的去了解我们的内心的秘密，然后彻底的这个体会到，彻底的这个领悟到我们的内心的本质的时候呢，所有的负面的情绪，所有的烦恼，就是从源头上可以断掉。
So this is using this technique to address problems on one level. Then at another level, the techniques of the Buddhist tradition, meditation techniques, are really addressed to understanding the fundamental secrets, the secret nature of the mind. And it's possible by discovering the nature of the mind that all of one's difficulties, all of one's negative emotional states, negative mental states, etc., can be completely overcome.
那么如果要训练，如果要修这个佛教的这个特有的这个方法这样子的话呢，那就是要学佛，那就是就成为一个佛教徒，这样子一步一步修才有办法。但是刚才我们讲的这些呢比较简单的东西，这些虽然是佛教的东西，但是这个佛教的东西，比如说我不学佛不信佛可不可以用，这些都可以用的。另外一个比较深入的深层次的方法呢，只有学了佛才可以用。
In terms of these extremely advanced states of meditation, this requires one to be a Buddhist practitioner and to then advance through the gradual stages of meditation practice. As the technique that we introduced tonight and similar such more simple techniques, however, are ones that can be put into practice by anyone, regardless of whether they're Buddhist or not.
好，这是我们今天讲的第一个。然后接下来我再简单的介绍一下这个修慈悲心的方法。
So that's the first meditation technique that I wanted to talk about tonight. And now I'll go on to talking very briefly about compassion meditation practice.
慈悲心呢，我们任何一个时候在现实生活当中都有非常大的帮助，对我们的这个处理很多事情都有非常大的帮助，尤其是人与人之间的这个关系调节这个矛盾等等，这方面呢有非常大的帮助。
Compassion meditation practice is something that has great benefits for us in every aspect of our lives.Particularly in terms of relationships with other people and conflicts that can arise in the context of those relationships.
然后像医生、护士、老师、 这样子经常跟接触很多人的这些人这些这个职业更加的这个有效，这个慈悲心呢更加的有效。这个美国在这方面做了很多的研究他们在这个医疗系统还有这个教育系统当中推广这个慈悲心的这个修法。
And compassion meditation is especially effective for people who work in professions that entail a lot of routine contact with other people, such as doctors, nurses, teachers, etc. There's been a lot of research undertaken into the impact and benefits of compassion meditation in America, and compassion meditation is now being implemented quite widely in hospital and education environments.
首先啊，什么叫做慈悲心啊？什么叫做慈悲心呢？悲，大悲心啊，悲心。什么叫悲心呢？我们发自内心的希望某一个正在受痛苦的这个人或者动物我们发自内心的希望他离开这个这个痛苦这样子的心叫做悲心。
So in understanding what we mean, in fact, by this term compassion, we can break it down into a couple of notions. The first being the sincere wish that any or a particular human or animal that is currently undergoing suffering be free of that state of suffering.
那么平时我们很多人，我们每天就在这个电视报纸等等这新闻上我们经常都听到哪里有自然灾害空难等等很多很多人就接感受受很多的痛苦，但是我们多数的人都是没有太强烈的感受。
Every day we see countless stories of disaster and misfortune on the news, in newspapers, etc. But the vast majority of us don't really pay too much attention.
那是因为我们通常是不太关注别人的痛苦，我们只关注我们自己的这个感受。
And this is because we are accustomed to not paying much attention to other people's suffering, but rather being focused on our own feelings.
这个我们全世界的人，所有的人都是这样子，先天就是这样，我们只关心自己的感受，不太关心别人的感受。如果我们要感受别人的要关心别人的感受的话，那就是需要训练才可以的关注自己的这个感受呢，我们不需要做任何的训练，先天就懂得关注自己的这个感受。但是我们如果要关注别人的感受，那就是要训练。
In this respect, all humans all over the world are the same. We are intrinsically inclined to contemplating or being attuned to our own feelings, our own situation, and less so to the situation of others. So whereas it's not necessary for us to have some kind of special training to assist us in paying attention to our own feelings, it is necessary for us to train ourselves to become more attuned to the situation and suffering of others.
那么为什么呢？我们听到看到别人的这个痛苦的时候呢，我们为什么没有强烈的这个反应那么当我们自己遇到一小小的痛苦的时候呢，我们就是有很强烈的反应，这个是为什么呢？就是因为我们不了解别人的感受所以我们没有太大的反应。
The reason why we don't have much of a reaction to other people's suffering, however, when we have even the tiniest amount of suffering ourselves, we have an extremely strong reaction. The reason for this is that we lack a fundamental appreciation of the suffering of others.
所以第一个最关键的就是我们要了解其他人的这个痛苦和别人的感受。
So the first thing we need to do is develop an understanding and an appreciation of others' feelings and suffering.
因为我们时间的关系不展开讲，简单的说有一个具体的方法简单的介绍。
Due to time constraints this evening, I'm not going to go into it in great detail. However, I will outline the practice in broad brushstrokes.
这个简单的训练的方法呢，当我们看到某一个非常痛苦的生命比如说病人或者是穷人等等包括动物都是一样当我们看到一个被正在宰杀的这个动物这样子的时候呢，然后我们很多人都是不敢看的不敢看回避但是这个时候呢，我们不回避专门的去看，先去了解他经历了什么痛苦，先要了解。
When we encounter someone who is currently undergoing great suffering, whether it be a person who is ill or a person who is extremely destitute or an animal that is just about to be slaughtered, most of the time we usually turn our gaze away. It's not something that we like to confront. We try to avoid this kind of situation. However, what we need to do is focus our attention on the being that is suffering before us in order to gain a complete understanding of the nature of their suffering.
当我们非常清楚地了解这个整个的这个过程的时候然后呢我们就是要思维这个人或者是这个动物我这个时候我们要想到如果是我如果是我的父母如果是我的儿女的话那会是什么样子要这样子去想。
After we've gained a very complete and thorough understanding or appreciation of the full nature of this other person or being suffering, then we need to imagine what if in fact this being were me, or if not me, then my parents, or if not my parents, then my own children.
平时我们，比如说我们像看戏、看电影一样的去看某一个人或者某一个动物的痛苦的时候呢，那除了我们的这个恐惧以外不一定有什么很特殊的这个感受，所以这个时候呢，我们要把它当作自己，或者是自己的父母或者儿女。
When we're accustomed to viewing another's suffering from the perspective of a person who's watching a movie or watching a play, a bystander essentially, then except for the feeling of fear, we don't necessarily generate any other particularly strong feelings. So it's for this reason that we substitute the being that is currently suffering either with ourselves or with our parents or children or someone otherwise very close to us.
好，这个时候呢，我们第二个步骤就是要想就是要去思考。那虽然这个生命这个动物呢不是我，也不是我的父母，也不是我的儿女，但是呢，这个被宰杀的动物跟我们之间有一个共通点，有一个同样的东西同样的东西是什么呢？比如说我或者是我的父母或者我的儿女大家都不愿意接受任何的这个痛苦，我们会回避所有的痛苦所有的痛苦我们都不愿意接受，不愿意面对那么 这个被宰杀的这个生命啊，或者是正在受痛苦的这个生命，它也是这样子啊。这一点我们都是一样的。
So what the next stage of this practice entails is acknowledging that the person or animal currently undergoing suffering is not ourselves, and not our parents, and not anyone else. Nevertheless, this being, for example, the animal currently awaiting slaughter, is fundamentally the same as us and the same as our parents in one fundamental respect, and that is that this being in no way desires suffering, not even the smallest amount of suffering. This is one way in which all beings are fundamentally equal.
好，另外还有一个这个共同点是什么呢？我们所有的人啊，都希望自己拥有幸福啊，这个。我跟我的父母儿女跟今天我们所看到的正在接受很难忍的这个痛苦的这个生命我们都是一样的，他也非常非常希望他自己拥有幸福这个就是跟我们一样，这个跟我们完全是同样的。
And there is also another fundamental respect in whichwe and the being currently undergoing suffering are equal, and that is that just like us, this animal currently facing extreme and unbearable suffering desires every happiness, has only desire or hope for being happy, and this is something that we and the animal absolutely share in common.
那么既然大家都是一样的同样的希望自己有幸福，希望自己远离痛苦既然大家都同样的，那么为什么我为了我的幸福而去破坏别人的幸福我有什么权利为了我的幸福去破坏别人的这个幸福我有什么资格为了我的幸福去破坏别人的幸福？
So given that we are all fundamentally equal in these respects in terms of our complete lack of desire to undergo suffering and our utter desire to enjoy happiness, what entitlement do I have to destroy or take away or otherwise negatively impact the happiness of another?
那么为什么我的幸福就这么重要，别人的幸福不重要呢？为什么为了我的幸福就可以让别人痛苦呢？
How is it that my happiness is so important, but the happiness of another is not? How is it that in order to achieve my own happiness, I'm willing to cause the suffering of another?
这样子思考以后呢，我们就会发现，那这个是没有道理的，没有理由的都是平等的。既然都是平等的，不能为了我的幸福去破坏别人的幸福都是平等，深深地体会到这一点。那么体会到了以后呢，从今以后，第一个，我们不会为了我自己的幸福而践踏别人的幸福。
So by contemplating, by reflecting on this very deeply and time again, we'll arrive at a direct experiential realization of the equality of all beings in this respect. And from this point onwards, we'll not easily engage in behavior that seeks to obtain our own happiness at the expense of others.
然后我们感觉到每一个生命都希望自己拥有幸福这样子的时候呢，然后我们也会去愿意去帮助帮助他们，我们愿意去帮助消除他们的这个痛苦这个心就叫做这个心就叫做慈悲心、悲心，比如说发自内心的希望这个人 远离痛苦啊，不仅仅是希望，而且在实际行动上啊，我要去帮助他啊，我要去解决他的这个痛苦，这个心啊，就叫做啊悲心。
And it's when we realize that all beings strive for happiness, that we will develop a willingness to assist them in achieving their own happiness and assist them in eliminating their various sufferings. And it's this desire to eliminate the sufferings of others, and not only just a simple desire, but also the willingness to undertake concrete measures and actions to rid them of their suffering, that is compassion. That's what we refer to, that's what the term compassion refers to.
啊，这个心完全是可以被训练的，完全是可以培养的，从无到有，从有到这个增长发展啊，这些都是完全是我们自己可以掌控的。
And it's this quality, it's this capacity of our minds that is absolutely able to be trained, it's able to be cultivated from a situation where we have none at all to a situation where we are able to generate compassion and also where we're able to increase our compassion, to develop our capacity as well.
然后我如果我们能够修这个方法，能够接受这个方法去训练的话，那么我们每一个人一定会成为一个利他主义者。
If everyone were able to accept, were able to take on this practice, then every single person would become extremely altruistic, a person committed to benefiting others.
从此以后呢，我们的生命就是变得更加的有意义。
And from this point onwards, our lives would become a lot more meaningful.
在这个一个短短的一个人的人生当中，可以帮助非常非常多的人。
It's possible in the short span of our lives to help a lot of people.
在不但是能够帮助别人啊，在这个工作当中，我们会感受到真正的幸福。
And not just assist in helping other people, but in the course of helping others to derive a real genuine happiness.
啊，就是当我们一切都是为了我自己着想，几乎就不会。为别人着想的这个时候呢，我们在生活当中很难找到真正的幸福感。
When our basic mode of operation is oriented towards thinking about ourselves and not being oriented to helping others, it's extremely difficult for us to find a genuine feeling of happiness.
我们以为有钱就会幸福，但是有钱了以后呢？还是不幸福啊！我们以为有权利会幸福，但是有权利了以后呢，仍然不幸福啊！我们以为有名声就会幸福，但是有了名声以后仍然不幸福啊！那么最后我们不知道有了什么东西才会幸福。
We to begin with, we think that.Being rich, having money will bring us happiness, but when we are in possession of money, we find that in fact it doesn't bring us happiness. Likewise, it is with power and status and fame.
啊，这样子，如果我们能够利益啊，能够帮助别人啊，发自内心的，这个不是表面上啊，就是发自内心的有这个慈悲心，然后去帮助别人的话，那么这个当中啊，我们一定会感受到真正的幸福。在这个之前呢，我们以为啊，我们去帮助别人，我们在奉献啊，我们。帮别人服务，为别人服务啊！但是我们没有想到这个当中啊，这个就是真正能够获得幸福的方法啊！这个我们没有想到，但是实际上啊，这个过程是表面上是我们在奉献，我们为别人服务，实际上啊，这个就是 给自己创造啊最高的幸福的最好的方法。
To begin with, we were of the opinion that in helping others, we're essentially being of service to them, making a contribution to them, and we were not aware of the fact that, in actual fact, by helping others, we are deriving our own greatest happiness, and that while on the surface it appears that we are giving to others, servicing them, as it were, in actual fact, we are establishing the conditions for our own genuine happiness.
啊，因为时间的关系，啊，我们今天的讲座就讲到这里，啊，大家都非常认真的听了，非常的感谢。
So that brings to the conclusion this evening's teaching. We don't have much time left. Thank you everyone for listening carefully.